a brash black Muslim boxer and a verbose Jewish broadcaster with a toupee on paper, they had no business becoming one of the most electrifying partnerships in American history. Yet Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell transformed each other into cultural phenomena that transcended sports. Their chemistry was instant, combustible, and utterly authentic. For two decades, their televised encounters became appointment viewing for millions, a sight gag that evolved into profound social commentary during America's most turbulent era. They were separated by everything: age, race, religion, education, but united by ambition, talent, and a willingness to challenge the status quo. Together, they didn't just change sports broadcasting. They held up a mirror to America's soul, reflecting its contradictions, love and hate, racism and tolerance, fear and courage. Their story begins not with them, but with the remarkable histories that shaped them. The original Cassius Marcellus Clay was a 19th century abolitionist who freed his slaves in 1844 and served as Lincoln's minister to Russia. One of Clay's freed slaves had a grandson who named his son Cassius Marcellus Clay, the boy who would become Muhammad Ali. Meanwhile, Alexander II's 1881 assassination triggered pogroms that sent millions of Jews fleeing westward, including Harris and Esther Cohen with their infant son Isidore, whose son would become Howard Cosell. Howard William Cohen was born in Brooklyn on March 25, 1918. He discovered his gift for public speaking in high school and reluctantly pursued law at NYU. After Pearl Harbor, he enlisted and became Major Cohen. In 1943, he married Emmy Abrams, a Protestant WAC private, a decision his Jewish parents couldn't accept. Facing post-war anti-Jewish discrimination, Howard changed his name to Cosell. By the mid-1950s, he boldly declared, "I'm going to be the most famous sports broadcaster there is." Despite anti-Semitism, Cosell persisted with his distinctly Brooklyn Jewish voice, developing a journalistic approach that set him apart from typical sportscasters. 17-year-old Cassius Clay became a champion amateur boxer whose unorthodox style made purists cringe. After winning gold at the 1960 Olympics, he defended America against racial criticism. His marketing genius emerged early. He tricked photographer Flip Schulka into an underwater photo shoot by falsely claiming he trained underwater, resulting in a 4-page Life magazine spread. Despite Miami Beach's temptations, Clay remained disciplined: no drinking, smoking, or womanizing. His religious awakening began in 1959 when he encountered the Nation of Islam, deepening through his relationship with Malcolm X. On February 25, 1964, Clay stunned the boxing world by defeating Sonny Liston for the heavyweight title. The next morning, he announced his conversion to Islam and his new name, Muhammad Ali. While most sport writers refused to use it, Howard Cosell recognized the principle at stake. "This is America," he said. "If a man wants to change his name for religious purposes, he has that right." This simple act of respect formed the foundation of their relationship. In February 1966, Ali's draft reclassification to 1A sparked his infamous retort, "I ain't got nothing against them Viet Cong." Though Judge Lawrence Grauman found Ali's conscientious objector claim sincere, the Justice Department overruled him. On April 28, 1967, Ali refused induction. Boxing commissions immediately stripped his title and license. Cosell became Ali's most prominent mainstream defender, supporting his legal right to religious exemption despite not endorsing his Vietnam stance. The defense cost him dearly. Hate mail branded him a nigger-loving Jew bastard, and death threats required police protection. Yet Cosell persisted, recognizing Ali's case transcended boxing. With boxing suspended, Ali's fame faded. He appeared on game shows for $450 and starred in a Broadway musical that closed after 4 days. After 43 months away, Ali returned in October 1970 against Jerry Corey in Atlanta. Jesse Jackson framed it as "Love It or Leave It" versus "Love It and Change It." Ali won in 3 rounds, beginning his journey back to the heavyweight title. Their relationship was transactional, not personal. Cosell was not our friend, said Ollie's camp manager, Gene Kilroy. We were never in his house. He was never in ours. He just used Muhammad. Both narcissists served each other's purposes while remaining psychologically distant. On crucial issues, Ali's Vietnam opposition, whether the government targeted him, the Nation of Islam's ideology, Cosell maintained strategic silence, defending Ali's right to controversial positions without endorsing them. The fight of the century between Ali and Joe Frazier on March 8, 1971, became history's most anticipated sporting event. Ali taunted early, "Don't you know I'm God?" But Frazier hammered Ali's body relentlessly. In the 15th round, a devastating hook sent Ali crashing down. Though Ali rose quickly, Frazier won by unanimous decision, dealing Ali his first professional defeat. The next morning, Ali showed remarkable grace. "I've never thought about losing, but now that it's happened, the only thing is to do it right." When someone called him champ, Ali corrected them. "Don't call me the champ. Joe's the champ now." At 32, Ali faced the 25-year-old undefeated George Foreman in The Rumble in the Jungle. Ali's rope-a-dope strategy, absorbing punishment until Foreman exhausted himself, led to an eighth-round knockout. Cosell's iconic call, "Down goes Foreman," cemented both men's legendary status. Their final great moment came in the Thrilla in Manila, Ali's brutal third fight with Frazier in 1975. After 14 punishing rounds, Frazier's trainer stopped the fight. Ali, barely able to stand, called it the closest thing to dying. Years later, Cosell cited this bout as the beginning of Ali's decline. Too many blows to the head had transformed him into somebody I no longer knew. By the late 1970s, both men declined. Ali lost his title to Leon Spinks in 1978, regained it to become the first three-time heavyweight champion, then retired on Cosell's show. 15 months later, Ali catastrophically fought Larry Holmes, who landed 320 punches. A pre-fight Mayo Clinic report had revealed coordination issues that should have prevented the bout. Cosell's hand trembled as he spoke with Ali afterward. Legends die hard. Emmy Cosell, Howard's wife of 46 years, died of a heart attack on November 18, 1990. A week later, Cosell returned to the microphone. "This is the most difficult broadcast I have ever had to do in my whole life." Emmy's death devastated him. 85% of him died right there, said his grandson Justin. In early 1992, Cosell recorded a birthday message for Ali's 50th. "You are exactly who you said you are. I love you." Cosell died on April 23, 1995, at age 77. When asked to light the Olympic flame at the 1996 Atlanta Games, Ali initially refused, citing his Parkinson's. Only when Howard Bingham emphasized 3 billion people would be watching did Ali agree. He appeared as a spectral figure in white, trembling as he held the torch. The stadium erupted as he struggled to light the apparatus. It was both heartbreaking and transcendent. Ali's resurrection in Martin Luther King Jr.'s city. President Clinton later told him, "When I saw it was you, I cried." In his weakened state, Ali became universally beloved, transformed from controversial figure to saint. The sanitized Ali of later years contrasted sharply with the dangerous, challenging figure of the 1960s, who demanded rights when doing so required courage. After Atlanta, he became the GOAT brand, his radical history often erased. What made the Ali-Cosell relationship so compelling was its authenticity in an increasingly manufactured media landscape. Their bombastic performances were art, but beneath lay genuine conviction and mutual respect. Ali, once feared as a radical, became perhaps too beloved. His complexity flattened into sainthood. Cosell has faded from public memory, though his influence on sports journalism remains profound. What endures is their remarkable chemistry, two American originals who found in each other the perfect counterpoint, challenging America to confront its deepest contradictions about race, religion, war, and freedom.